tax, I believe that air taxi operators and should also come under the control of the guide board if they're involved in the hunting and fishing industry. They need to be responsible for what their clients bring up. If that was, that's my stand on that point.
And then another thing, like, you know, what I was saying is that, like, during the session, you know, we have so many issues to deal with, and these are really important issues, so we just don't want to, you know, brush over it. So it might be better to do, like, a subcommittee for those people all the time are working on
it. I understand what you mean.
And we're, I've been in reception in the Mon Bar and Sushi, and the candidates for those people online, too. And then one last question or comment. And were you talking about trying to, you said there might be some way to close a loophole for non-resident aliens, or just to the note that you really mentioned that.
My name is Bob Eubank. I'm a registered bank. I've been registered since 1980. And I came up after the areas were allocated to everybody. I came in too late to have one given to me. And so I pursued the route that most everybody else in my age bracket has. We worked for somebody else and worked out deals with them to pursue our guiding careers. Always the guide areas has kind of been a problem, and we wish there would have been a way to rectify that situation, but as of yet there hasn't. One of the comments I want to make is these guys that want to be outfitters want to have these areas and work in them, but they think they're the last ones that do. What's going to happen to the new bunch of outfitters is going to come up also, that they're going to want areas and they're going to want to get into it. And that's, thank you for it.
My name is Ben Thorson. Professional pilot and have a system guide license. I've been in around Alaska and in and out of the state since 1957. The only two areas that I have not hunted in the state is far southeastern Alaska and the extreme of the Alaska Peninsula. And aside from being a professional pilot and an assistant guide, I want to take the position that I've not heard expressed here, and that is the licensed sportsman hunter. We heard earlier testimony today from a registered guide who said that the state of Alaska holds no obligation for a non-resident hunter to help him succeed in his effort to collect what is rightfully his, that which he got a license for. If you go back to the lower 48 after, I'm going to pick a break, I'll be careful, 15 January, the state of Alaska spends many thousands of dollars on advertising. promoting the state's tourism market, which includes hunting. And it sounds like it's a cakewalk. It might be somewhat misrepresented. I don't mean it's done maliciously, I mean it's probably done inadvertently. Give people the idea that if you can come to Alaska, it's all bright sunshine, it's bright fireweed, and it's beautiful, which it is. But it's not an easy thing to come up here and hunt. I think that anyone who buys a $60 non-resident license, anyone who pays a charge fee, whatever that might be, for the game tag, should legitimately have an equal opportunity to collect and fulfill his aspirations of buying those licenses and tags. And whether he does that through the services of a registered guide, an air taxi operator, and I like to italicize a legitimate, honest outfitter, I think you should have that opportunity. I queried an individual who testified previously, and it sounded to me as if the individual who buys a non-guided hunt must subjugate his aspirations in terms of collecting a trophy-sized animal to those who buy a guided hunt. I don't think that should be the understanding at all. The individual who buys those licenses and tags should have the opportunity to select who he wishes to help him with that opportunity, if at all. He may elect to do it totally on his own. There's a matter of, as I alluded to earlier, hunter safety. There are numerous so-called hunters in the lower 48 who come up here, who have hunted a few deer in Minnesota, they've shot an antelope in Wyoming, and went on an unsuccessful out in Colorado to think they can hunt. They're in for a big surprise when they get off the commercial motor transportation in Alaska, I guarantee. And if they come up here with a trade, a Walmart sleeping bag and a penny store tent, and elect to hunt in your area down in the peninsula, they can have a very, very hectic few days. And I think that there's cases where their life and well-being might very well be in jeopardy. I think that they do need some counsel, some advice, and some assistance in adequately preparing themselves for the environment that they're going to hunt. There have been numerous suggestions as to what we might, in terms of phraseology, or what to classify in terms of reference, a guide or an outfitter, and I thought a good place to start might be the Webster's Third Edition of the British Dictionary. It's an acceptable reference. And when it said it says an outfit, the act or process of fitting out or equipping as for a voyage or expedition, or to furnish or supply. An outfitter is one that outfits a dealer or a provider in equipment supplies for expeditions or camping trips. That same reference further identifies a guide as a person who leads or directs another in a way, a course, as in a strange country or through difficult terrain. Now, a synonym would be to lead, steer, pilot, or direct. I think that differentiates between the two. A cursory review of some other areas in the Alaska statutes provides that I think there is a proviso to recognize under the Trade and Commerce that there are services that be rendered and be legitimately recognized as a trade or business. Find it out of question that if there is to me, a legitimate area where both services can be requested and rendered, but I definitely think that there should be a means of control. They must be answerable to somebody or somebody if you're going to be in a commercial business. I think the state of Alaska has a legitimate legal interest in, and has a legitimate economic interest in, your activities. And I'm referring now to the operator. And I know of no place in any of the 50 states where an activity is not answerable to somebody or somebody, and that be the body of law, which may or may not be the case that we're talking about here in terms of the operator. I guess the phenomenon I've ever had is I've heard many conversations in and out of this room, and it seems to me that there has been a class action indictment of the operator. The supposition that if one is not a guide and involves an activity for economic gain, that it's unlawful. If that is in fact true, then those people who have this information should bring it to the aware of Fish and Game Wildlife Protection. But those individuals can be appropriately dealt with. But I don't think it's fair to class action. We've heard testimony as to all the horror stories in the out there. My memory goes back in this area of hunting in Alaska some 29 years. And it's still very vivid in some horror stories that I might relate to, relates to registered guides. We heard testimony from Fish and Game earlier that 84 to 87, there's been some punitive action taken against unlawful outfit. If my source of information is correct, in the last 10 years in Alaska, there have been some 50-plus registered guide licenses revoked, suspended. Now, that certainly should not be a class action indictment of those individuals who have been and are operating in an honest, professional, credible fashion. What I mean is drawing a comparison, but let's not try to shoot two birds with one shot. I think that you talk about historics, and I'll summarize with this. The difference between guiding and outfitting, I think the best historic example that I can think of is the Lewis and Clark Expedition. It took some three commercial companies nearly a year to outfit the Lewis and Clark Expedition. But I took a little frail native girl who grew up about 60 miles north of where I grew up in North Dakota to guide them, so there must be some differential there. True. Okay. The tourism department of the state of Alaska spends a large amount of money during the fall, winter, and early spring in promotion of Alaska, which I think is fairly legitimate. But I think sometimes they make it look too easy. And as I referenced it, and I don't mean to sound sarcastic, to the guy who hunted deer in Minnesota and went to Wyoming, they think it's too easy to come up here and hunt. I honestly do. They don't come up here mentally prepared, physically prepared, or equipped to accommodate the problems that you're going to incur in hunting in the state of Alaska. It's not a cakewalk. Saying is that the individual who buys a license, gets on a Northwest or a Delta airline now and flies to Alaska and hunts without some type of assistance up here, whether it be from a registered guide, a legitimate outfitter, a Terra Air taxi operator who takes the concern for his client, I think that individual is putting himself in some peril.
Do you think an outfitter should be responsible for that person if that person doesn't be?
I don't want to get in and sound like an attorney now, I'll refer to it, but I think any time there's a contractor relationship between individuals and good and valuable consideration changes place, the contractual arrangement is at play. And when you put yourself in that position when out there, I'm going to, for a fee, do you a service. I've put myself in somewhat of a fiduciary relationship to you. And I think I owe you that. If I'm taking you into an area, I owe to see at least to see to your welfare. I think you, the outfitter should be accountable for his actions in the preparation and handling of his farm. Absolutely. I think the air taxi operator is kind of a tough question because you've got two areas of regulation. You've got the federal aspects of the conduct of his business with an air taxi operator. And the federal government's rather jealous about the control and regulation of that. However, I think if he's a legitimate conscientious operator and he sees somebody come in here from Toledo, Ohio, and he explains, and I might sound jestful, but I've actually seen this in circumstances. A penny store sleeping bag and a Sears tent, and you're going to take him down on the peninsula and drop him off knowing full well what the weather ramifications can be. And he doesn't be conscious enough of his concern to advise that individual. I think he's a little remiss, I really do. I exercise the privilege of an one part of 135 power, but not necessarily in Alaska. But I can see myself.
Well,
that's a pretty encompassing question. I would say this. It would be an individual who had a considerable amount of experience, and I'm going to look not so much to the experience before the experience took place. An individual who has had some background in hunting, I'm going to say Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, probably eastern Washington, Oregon, could probably come to Alaska and do pretty well, because the hunting conditions are quite similar. But I can tell you from observation experience that, and I don't mean to put down people from Minneapolis, but I've seen people from Minneapolis come to western South Dakota and eastern Montana and shoot a mule deer and take them home on a fender out there with him. And that's a personal observation. I come out there and I say, equipment that he thinks is adequate, that on Alaska Peninsula wouldn't last 15 minutes. And once that individual is out there, he's dropped off by air taxi, left to his own fortune by an outfitter, the weather condition changing, that individual is in physical peril. It's true of any individual that doesn't use some competence and judgment and put himself in that position. It's not isolated to non-residents. Somebody who was competently advised.
Can you think of any classifying
on the environment? Well, I think the lack of the not only the lack of the population, 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 I would certainly look and probably ask many pointed questions before I did deliver that individual to that environment. I would take those things. He can't be, can't hold his hand. He's a little boy, he has a right to exercise a critical advice. But I think it's remiss of an individual who does this for a fee, does not ask very leading pointed questions and do some sort of counsel advising him. the other point I'd like to make on the matter of reporting harvest requirements, game regulations, I think, are rather explicit on what the responsibility are of the hunter, and I think that responsibility lies with the hunter. And I don't think it should be delegated to a third party, whether it be the guide, you know, what it is now, whether it be the packer, slash outfitter, or an air tax outfitter. It's pretty clear who's responsible, and I think that individual should be held responsible, and that'd be the hunting of a privilege, it's not a right.
Our business is so severely restricted we can no longer make a profit. We
not operate much out of the season and conducted limited fishing activities at our several outposts. I urge you to speak out against House Bill 183 and Senate Bill 191 as it is presently drafted. There is nothing wrong with the word outfitter as we use the term. Legitimate lodges are going to be allowed to house these hunters that cannot offer any equipment for spike cams, etc. No hunter is going to travel thousands of miles bringing all his equipment with him and then spend part of his time in a lodge. If this legislation is to pass, I request you work for a clause to grandfather our rights to continue operation. I further ask that you explore the possibilities of granting long-term time operators who have hundreds of thousands of dollars invested an exclusive area right near their permanent structures, giving us the right to hire a registered guide to conduct our work. As the law now reads, we cannot hire guides to work with us.
Because the activity
the unit where Montana is located has three guides, two of them take 200 or 300 per season. And to my knowledge, the third guide has never guided there. None of them will cooperate with us because they can make more money doing it themselves. After all, isn't that the reason they got the exclusive area? I know there are guides. Those laws allowed us an exclusive area of rights. In the past, we worked with registered guides for alien bear hunters. But with the advent of exclusive area, big game guides had exclusive rights and cooperation ceased. Ramona, you have heard my sad tale all too often as I closed and squeezed out of the tourist business, which I suspended several $100,000. I once again ask for your help and the help of the Alaska Legislature. Thank you, Madam Chair. You're a non-resident, and all of a sudden, on the next day,
being requested, but on the other hand, the piece of equipment that was something else can be by the city. We want you in a position of security, persons moving on the cross, and again, it's all for the rest. The fundamental purpose of the hotel. But I hate to end up with a big call because you gave somebody a sleeping bag or a
tent or something like that.
62 years old. I lived in Alaska since 1972. And the main reason I moved up here was to be able to go hunting and fishing in Alaska. Since that time, I've hunted all the western states. I hunted Africa. And like I said, a couple of years ago, I got a 6.5 license to go fishing on the Kenai River. And also started doing these outfitted hunting trips this last year. I think that the main problem we have here is the conflict between licensed guides that have been under the control of the guide board and people like myself that want to get into the guiding profession to find it very difficult under the existing regulations. I think that the existing guides are backing the proposed legislation to protect their business and economic interests, which brings up my major complaint is that most of these guys were getting their hunting area over the last 20 years. And they really didn't pay for these areas. But since they were assigned the area, they think that they own them, and they think that they own the game resources on them. And I know in my last 15 years, I've had several run-ins with guys in different areas flying into my camp and asking me, you know, what I was doing hunting in the area. And at that time, I was just a resident hunter. And I never did quite figure out why they were flying into my camp asking what I was doing. But I know now that I've been here a long time. I think that the whole guide law should be reviewed. I think it should be modified to allow outfits. I think that there can be some rules and regulations developed to make outfitting a legal profession and one that most legal outfitters have no problem with. You know, my definition of a guide is somebody that takes a hunter and provides all the services to him to complete a successful hunt. And that's transportation to a camp, providing a good camp, meal, providing him with an assistant guide to pursue game, helping him stock, spot game, judge trophy animals. Once the animal is taken, I think that the guide is really helpful in picking out the animal, taking care of the meat, and getting that meat packed out of camp. I think an outfitter doesn't do all these services. He provides transportation, possibly to a campsite, and provide a nice camp. But after that, the hunt is on his own. And I know personally from my own experience that you have to make it clear with your client for what services you are providing. If you're not providing a guided hunt, but he's got to bring his own meat pack, his own pack, he's got to pack his meat pack in the camp. Of course, one of the big differences is the cost of these services. You know, guys are getting $8,500 for a brown bear hunt, getting $6,500 for a sheep hunt, $3,500 for a caribou hunt, $5,500 to $6,500 for a moose hunt. A lot of people can't afford those kind of costs. An outfitted hunt you can provide to a non-American hunter for anywhere from $1,500 to $2,000, but still give that hunter an opportunity to hunt game in a lifetime. And I think that's one reason I moved to Alaska was, you know, 15 years ago when I was a lot younger, I couldn't afford to hire a guy to go sheep hunting. So I made that decision that, hey, I'd never be able to afford it. And I really didn't want to hire a guy anyway because I like to do it on my own. And right now there's a lot of people like me that live in a lower 48 that want to have the opportunity to hunt in Alaska. And they don't want to have to hire a guy. Possibly they can't afford to hire a guide either. But they're experienced hunters, and they can hunt on their own up here. And I've heard some of these guys say, well, yeah, we have a lot of tough conditions up here, a lot of tough country. Well, I don't think it's any tougher than some of the back country. in Montana, Idaho, or elk hunters. I think a good experienced hunter can hunt in Alaska, take care of himself, and have an excellent experience out there. Now, one other thing I'm looking at is it's difficult to get a guy's license. You know, right now I'm an assistant guide, but I have to work for a license and master guide for 3 years. And I talk to a lot of guys about working for them. They don't want to pay any money to help. $75 to $100 a day plus meals. And you have to do that for 3 years. And then once you do that, even if you do do that 3 years, you still have to get an area. And under the existing laws, it's almost impossible to do that. I don't really know how you can do it, because the way the laws are, it's just too hard. I think as far as getting records on outfitters, I've heard several guys say that we need to get more records. I don't see any problem with that. I mean, I think there's several easy ways of getting a handle on how many outfitters there are, and how many green animals are taken, and where they're hunted. I guess that's all I have to say. I'd like to see, you know, this thing go through. I mean, I have no problem with some rules and regulations for outfitters. I think that these proposed laws now need a lot of work. I think that the people that I deal with are all, first off, interested in doing a hunting trip in Alaska. Most hunters in the lower 48, before they feel like they're ready for Alaska, have done a lot of hunting in the lower 48. I mean, it's just like people that live here in Alaska. I mean, this is something that I think you should think about. It's that a resident of Alaska, take yourself or anything. You've never been, maybe you've never been brown bear hunting in your life. But right now, just because you're a resident of Alaska, you can go out brown bear hunting by buying $25 out. But most of the people I talk with, they've hunted before, they've read a lot about Alaska, they've had an interest in Alaska, and they feel fairly confident in their ability. I don't run into many